It's Free Talk Live. It's the live Sunday edition of the program. We invite you to join us here on the radio waves, where you can take control of the airwaves and bring up anything that is on your mind. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype as well. You can Skype in here at Skype username lrn.fm. With you in the studio tonight, it's me, Ian.
And me, Johnny Ray.
So we're going to go right into your calls and thoughts. We're actually going to start out on Skype, where AC is on the line, and he's calling from Ohio. Hello, AC.
Yeah, before I get to my topic, I just want to do a quick response to my fellow Ohioan, Stefan.
Okay.
As a guy who lives also here in Ohio, and I go to many different independent game stores, because that's one of the things I like to do, gets me out of the house, I have heard a lot of stories about the counterfeit cartridges.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely is something with the rise of retro gaming becoming a very collectible, profitable thing nowadays that
That's attracting scam artists who want to make a quick buck by, for listeners that weren't tuned in, you're referencing Stefan in Ohio who works in a video game store, and they see these scammers coming in with manufactured labels. They get professionally printed in some cases, it looks like they just printed them on their laser printer. Professionally printed labels for old games that are collectible and that are worth a lot of money, and then they'll slap that label onto a cartridge that may or may not have that old game in it. If it has, they might put it on an old cartridge of Duck Hunt or Super Mario Brothers or something like that, where there's a zillion of them, and so it's easy to find those. And then you're just basically trying to fool somebody at the counter who doesn't check the game. But if they check the game and it checks out to be the actual game, well, then they have to open it up and look inside to see if the board that's in the game, these old cartridges, isn't a new board, because there's these things called repros? Or
reproductions.
Yeah, reproductions. So some Chinese manufacturer has got the ROM for the old game. They manufacture a new board in 2016 or 2017. Then the scammer will put that in an old Nintendo case, slap one of these labels on it, these repro labels or whatever you want to call them. And that way they have an old copy of, whatever. It looks like an old copy of this valuable game, but it's actually, in point of fact, a brand new copy of it. And so to the collector, that's actually not really worth much. But, they're trying to scan these video game stores. So they have to actually crack open the cartridge and physically inspect the board to make sure it's the original board from the 1980s or whatever year the game came out.
Just like a real antique dealer.
Right, it's crazy. So anyway, that's what you were commenting on, AC, so go ahead.
Yeah, I'll talk about that in depth some other time, because I got a lot to say about that, believe me. But what I wanted to get to was Friday night, you had a guy called in who, was one of these guys that says, I love this country, I love freedom, I love small government, but we gotta lock our border down and ban the Muslims from coming in, but I believe in freedom and small government. I'm like, oh, please.
Right. Yeah, he wants a total police state, but at the same time claiming out of the other side of his mouth that he wants freedom and small government. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and one of the parts I wanted to get to is that, these people talk about national security. Like, well, what about our national security? And one of the things I would say is, if you want national security, here's what you do. You get all those people in Washington, D.C., and you tell them to take a long walk off a short pier into an active volcano. So that's one way of doing it. But one of the things he mentioned was, like, what about the terrorist attack that happened in London? You don't want that to happen here. And the thing of it is that if you actually looked up that attack, the guy that did that, he wasn't an immigrant or a refugee. He was a natural-born British citizen.
Ah, okay. Yeah, see, I didn't know enough about it. You're referring to the Ariana Grande bombing that happened in London.
Right. And what's even more shocking is that this guy had been on the British radar. He actually was in a documentary about Islamic terrorism, left the country. I think he went to go fight alongside ISIS and then came back into the country. And even people in his mosque had reported him as being a suspicious person.
Wow.
And the government there did nothing. Just like the guy who shot up that airport. I mean, the FBI, some people reported that he had some weird beliefs. The FBI interviewed him and evaluated him, and they said he's fine. And he goes and shoots up an airport. So, yeah, there's your national security for you, America.
Wow. Hey, quick question. Are you outside? Because it's almost like there's like a wind noise or something.
I got a fan going.
Okay, because I was hearing that. So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of confused people out there. What do you want to do about it?
Didn't the NSA just fail their own tests again recently?
You mean the TSA?
The TSA, yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. It's like so all these people who are talking about, you guys, look, what about national security? I'm like, the people you want them to do national security are failing miserably at, you know, right, going after these real terrorists. And these are just two stories. It happens all the time. There's been tons of stories of some of these people, these Middle Easterns who live here in the United States who have committed violent acts.
Because
there's been a couple that they've actually had their people in their mosque has reported them to the authorities. And
they've
done
nothing.
Yeah, so there's your national security problem. It's not destroying freedom and increasing a police state and building a wall. It's the fact that your own government is incompetent and doesn't want to do its job. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what else? What can we say to add to that? I think you nailed it there, AC. I'd rather talk about the video game stores. So, you know, you said you got a lot to share on that. Pick something.
Well, the thing about it is that I've been very familiar with reproductive carts for years, and the thing about reproductive carts is that if it's a game that's very popular, that, you know, that is hard to get, like one of the most popular games, say on the Super Nintendo, is a game called Earthbound. That game cartridge goes for $250.
Wow.
But if you actually want a physical card, but if you just want a physical one to play on a Super Nintendo, you know, you can go get a reproduct for $50. Usually it's very easy to tell the difference between a reproduction and an original. Like one of the game stores I went to, they actually managed to get in. Someone turned in an original copy of Earthbound that was complete in the box with the this was a special edition that came with a player's guide.
Wasn't it like a humongous box?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
They
game.
They had that thing for $750. I'm like, who's going to buy that? And I'm like, someone bought it.
Someone
bought it.
Yeah.
You know, I think a libertarian banker is he was talking about this when he came to visit that day.
What, Earthbound?
Yeah, he had some kind of special knowledge about it. I think he might have been in the business of selling like antique carts or something. But he knew all about it. Earthbound has, let's see, some of the characters from Earthbound, I'd never heard of it, but I know some of the characters are in the Smash Brothers games. Because I guess, it was a popular franchise in Japan and didn't become one in the U.S. until later.
Mother.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those series that Nintendo's kind of, you know, they haven't touched since the throne, like, and you know, and so it's come of a cult series and stuff like that. Yeah, and it's very rare.
So you're saying these repro carts are actually like as priced as high as what the original price would have been?
No, absolutely not. No,
you said $50.
Well, I mean, if they were originally new, I thought you were talking about like as much as an original copy would, like if you tried to turn.
No. I meant like back in the day when these games would have come out on the shelf, they would have been $50, $60 bucks. So you're saying the repros now are charging about the same amount of money?
Yeah, because they're very valuable and because a lot of people like having them. It's like, you know, even collectors like having it because they don't want to play the original. They want to keep it mint. So like here's a reproduction. I'm like, and that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And so reproductions are also good for things like playing games that weren't released. That like there's a like one of the unreleased games for the Super Nintendo, Star Fox 2, was put on a reproduction. The game was finished, but it was never released though.
Wow.
And so you can find that on a reproduction cartridge. Or there's a popular NES horror game that later became the inspiration for the Resident Evil series known as Sweet Home. Someone translated that into English, put it on an NES cartridge, and you can get it. So reproductions have been very popular as a way to play games that never were released or didn't get released in a certain market.
Now, they're not technically legal, right?
The repros? I don't know about that. That's the thing. I don't know about the legality on it because I know that some of these – they're like one of the groups that did this was an American company called RetroZone. So I don't know.
So, yeah. I mean the question is, you know, are the manufacturers licensing the actual games?
I highly doubt that.
Are they just grabbing the ROMs and putting them on cartridges and selling them from halfway across the world? I think it's great. I mean I love the idea of the reproduction carts. I just don't love the idea of people using them to try to scam folks. Hey, thanks, AC, for calling in and sharing your thoughts here tonight. I appreciate it. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. Well, there's money to be made where there's a collectible, there's or an easily reproduced collectible, there's going to be scammers. So you got to watch yourself out there if you're into that collecting world of video games. More coming up here, 855-450-FREE. It is Free Talk Live and Live Sunday Edition here with you in the studio. It's Ian.
And Johnny Ray.
Our toll-free number if you want to join us is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. Whether it's video game scam artistry or Bitcoin or whatever it is that's on your mind, we can talk about it here tonight. I've got the story that I wrote up over the last – it took me a couple of days to really kind of put it together and edit it because it's pretty lengthy. It's about 2,600 words, and it's all about what's going on in the Bitcoin world, why, you know, this August 1st deadline, what it's all about, what you need to know, especially if you're new to Bitcoin, especially, or maybe you're not new to Bitcoin. Maybe you just haven't been paying attention to the Bitcoin news, because it's certainly possible that you acquired some Bitcoin a few years ago, put it aside, and promptly, you know, got busy with other things, and you haven't thought much about it. Well, you probably should know what might happen on August 1st. And I don't say that to stir up fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I don't want to be that guy. But on the other hand, I feel like there's some level of knowledge that could be useful to people about what might be coming. And that way they can prepare themselves appropriately for it. Speaking of Bitcoin, if you want to learn about it, you can go to Bitcoin.com, the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. If you want to buy Bitcoin or talk to other people about Bitcoin or play games with your Bitcoin or read the latest news about Bitcoin, they've got all that over at Bitcoin.com. It's the one-stop shop for everything that you need to get into Bitcoin life. Now, the question is this a good time to get into Bitcoin life? Because the price, I don't know if you've been watching, Johnny Ray, but it's been dropping.
Oh, has it? No, I haven't been watching the past few days. I broke my phone, so I'm...
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's
What'd
in
you
the,
do to it?
I just...
Drop it?
Yeah, I just swept it off a counter and...
You didn't have a case on it? You don't have a case?
No. I broke it some months ago, and that just started a chain of me not getting a case, breaking it, thinking,
got
to get a case.
Oh, God.
Got to get a case and getting it repaired and then breaking it,
That's
getting it
right.
repaired.
That's right. You did send it in for repair.
Right. So it's in the shop now, getting
you
a
sent
new
it
screen.
Back
yes.
For another new screen.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to order a case for it this time?
Maybe. Maybe not.
What does it cost to replace a screen on a smartphone?
$150.
My God.
I know.
Now, you had told me before that you had, what, the S4, the Galaxy S4?
Right.
You can get a brand new one for $150.
Okay. That sounds smart. I mean, but a case for 20 or 30 or however much.
Yeah.
That's the investment that I need to make.
That is definitely.
An OtterBox.
The OtterBox, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody out there, some company that's competing with the OtterBox and has something that's, you know, just as good. I just don't know what that company is.
Uh-huh.
And the last time I was looking at phones, I literally went to the OtterBox website to see what phones they're making cases for to narrow down my choices, because there's a lot of phones out there, right?
Uh-huh.
But if you drop these things, man, I mean,
yeah, it's safe.
It's a crapshoot. It's a well, I mean, if you don't have the case,
if you've got an
shoot.
OtterBox,
yeah, if you got an OtterBox, you're probably going to be just fine. And they're not a sponsor of the show. That's what I use.
Yeah, but you were telling me the price of Bitcoin is going down, maybe in some trepidation over this August.
Let me pull up the Bitcoin average price, because when I was looking at it earlier today, it had dropped below $1,900.
Okay, yeah, I'm used to it being at $2,500.
Yeah, it had been hovering there at around $2,500 or so for, I don't know, several weeks. I mean, kind of up and down, a couple hundred here, a couple hundred there, but it never really had gone below $2,300 in the last few weeks. And then just over the last several days, it's just started a downward trend. And today, it's last time I looked, was around $1,920, mm-hmm. according to BitcoinAverage.com, which takes the global marketplaces and brings them together for an sort of overall price of Bitcoin right now, $1,915 for one Bitcoin. And that's down from a peak of close to $2,900 just a matter of weeks ago. So, I mean, it's lost $1,000 worth of value. And yeah, the obvious speculation here, and anytime we talk about Bitcoin and what the price is doing, let's be clear. We have no idea why. I mean, there's a whole global marketplace out there for Bitcoin, and who knows what moves the price one direction or another. But certainly, speculatively, it's possible that it's the fears over what might go down on August 1st. So what is going to go down on August 1st? Well, maybe nothing. So maybe all this fear is overblown. Maybe it's much ado about, you know, Zero. We can't be sure exactly what's going to happen, but there are some potential changes that could be coming that people need to know about. So let me jump into this story here, and we'll dig in as necessary, because I did what I consider to be a pretty good job explaining the basics here. And for those of you who are new to Bitcoin, it's a decentralized cryptocurrency. It has taken the world by storm. I mean, it's been incredibly successful over the last 8 years or so that it's been around. It came out in 2009, and even at $1,900 per Bitcoin, it's still the world's most valuable currency. I mean, it's more valuable than gold. It's more valuable than probably all the, you know, the regular government monies combined. There's Bitcoin's amazing. It really is.
I'm looking at cryptocurrency market capitalizations, and it looks like Ethereum has got about half of the market cap than Bitcoin has.
Yep. It's following closely behind Bitcoin. The overall market cap for all of the cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and Ethereum and all the competitors, has dropped dramatically. I remember it was just a few weeks ago where it passed $100 billion, and now it's what, 60-something?
45.
45.
Well, it's 45. Bitcoin and Ethereum together is 45.
Just those two?
Yes.
Okay. And I think you add in the rest of them, and it goes up a little bit more from there. But in a recent in-depth article at freekeen.com, I discussed the out-of-control fees to send Bitcoin. The executive summary of that piece is that Bitcoin is somewhat broken due to the high fees that have been caused because of the Bitcoin network not being able to scale to consumer demand. And we've talked a lot about the fee situation here. It seems to have been remedied somewhat recently since this agreement that we'll talk about in a moment that a lot of the people in the Bitcoin industry came to several weeks ago. What they call the mempool has been going down. Now, the mempool is the area where Bitcoin transactions are held if they don't have enough of a fee to get through into a block and get mined. And we can talk about what all that means here in a moment. But this mempool is basically like a waiting area for Bitcoin transactions that just don't have enough fees to be competitive and get, you know, get through, basically.
Right. And the mempool had been filling up into the weekend and then clearing out in the weekend, over the weekend.
Had it been? Okay.
Before the New York agreement, that was that transaction price situation where the transaction fees were rising.
Yeah, it was going crazy.
It would clear once a week, you know, when the volume was down. But then it stopped, and it would be a couple of days after that it would clear, and it was starting to. And then the mempool started, it drained out.
It's not completely drained out, but yeah, after this agreement, which we'll get into a little bit more about what the agreement entails, this mempool, which had hit as high as 120 megabytes of data at one time, has been now as low as like 5 to 20 to 30. I think earlier today, was at 30 megabytes. So it's down significantly, and it means that the fees are down as well. And that's good, but we're not out of the woods yet as far as these fees are concerned, because nothing's actually been fixed. The problems that have brought these fees about, with a Bitcoin network being full and not being able to scale to the appropriate consumer demand, those problems haven't been solved yet. It's just that there are fewer transactions or whatever that are happening, and there's some good question as to why that is. Anyway, we can continue more about what's happening with Bitcoin, what might happen on August 1st coming up.
What's more profitable, running your business or doing bookkeeping? Doing your business, of course, but you want to keep your books so that you can maximize your tax savings, right? What if I told you that there's a person that's a bookkeeper, accountant, and law school graduate that's also a hardcore libertarian?
My name is Melanie Johnson, and I hate the state. I will aggressively help you to minimize your tax exposure and maximize profits, all while staying within the law.
Melanie's your best choice for your taxes and bookkeeping needs. Go to tax.freetalklive.com and check out our website, tax.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live, you dial toll free. Join us on the radio. If you like, you can take control of the airwaves. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about the world's most important cryptocurrency. That's Bitcoin. Will it continue to be the world's most important cryptocurrency, or will it have a devastating schism, a fork in the currency? We'll explain what all that means coming up here, because this is a big possibility coming up on August 1st. It's kind of a deadline that has arbitrarily been set for these different conflicting sides in what is essentially a, some people have called it a civil war, but it's not very civil. I mean, nobody's been killed or anything like that, but people are being pretty nasty towards one another, some people, over taking sides in this conflict that is based out of the question of what should Bitcoin do to scale up, because it's super popular. So it's having these growing pains, basically, where there are so many people who are using Bitcoin that it's full. Like, the network can't handle the number of transactions that people want to put through it. And so the question that they've been arguing about now for a couple of years behind the scenes has been, well, how do we solve this? And some people cannot come to an agreement on how to solve it, so they may end up just splitting off. So it's Ian and Johnny Ray in the studio here. If you want to comment, you're welcome to join us, 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. So as we were discussing, the Bitcoin fees are up overall.
Yeah, you and Daryl, now have you guys been monitoring that daily? Because
yes.
I know you were doing some science on it the day that you talked to Charlie Shrem.
I don't know about science, but yes, I have been watching the price of the fees, because I will normally send some Bitcoin on a daily basis. So I'm always checking to see what the fees are. And they are down this, you know, right now for the last few weeks, they've been down compared to what they were in, say, May mm-hmm. and in April or whatever. So they're down, but they're still higher than what they should be. They're still, you're still going to spend 20 cents to, you know, to a dollar, depending, to send Bitcoin. It's been as high as like $2 or $3 on the median fee. Some people paid even more to send Bitcoin in the recent past. So it's down from the peak, but it's still not down to like 2 cents where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bitcoin that you and I knew years ago, you could send for free if you wanted. You could send with no fee and it would get through. You could send with a cent or 2 cents and it would get through relatively quickly. That's not the case anymore. And so the question is, how do they handle this? And that's what the fundamental disagreement here is, as I've pointed out in the story, why we're temporarily shutting down Bitcoin vending machines on July 31st. That's the headline over at freekeen.com, the top of the page right now. Bitcoin, you know, how's it going to handle this? Well, the fees have been rising over the last 6 months, and that has killed off the previous usefulness that Bitcoin had for microtransactions or even small dollar transactions. So, for instance, if I just came from downtown Keene, New Hampshire, where there are businesses that accept Bitcoin as payment, but when fees were $2 per, you know, Bitcoin transaction, why would I want to go and buy a soda at Corner News for a dollar and pay $2 worth of a fee on top of that? No one sane would do something like that. So the high fees had started to, I think, really hurt the Bitcoin ecosystem. Even though the price was going up, the fees were also going up. And so it has sort of had this dichotomous look of being successful with the price, but on the other hand, being less useful behind the scenes in, you know, in reality.
Yeah, I think one of the great selling points of Bitcoin originally was it was had kind of an international flavor,
mm-hmm.
and part of that was these low transaction fees that allowed people in various regions who have, you know, possibly widely disparate incomes could be very low.
Poor.
Poor people. Bitcoin of the low transaction fees empowered those people to send money where before they couldn't do it at all.
Right, because a dollar's, you know, perhaps an entire day or week's worth of income for uh-huh. those folks. So nobody in a poor area is going to want to spend a dollar to send money. I mean, if they can avoid it, they're going to go with something else. And there are a bunch of other options besides Bitcoin now. So, you know, if you want to send cryptocurrency, you can use Dash and you can send it for a fraction of a penny. So it just doesn't make sense to do small transactions with Bitcoin anymore. Even right now, even though the fees are down from where they were, they're still too high. So now the ugly Bitcoin not-so-civil war that has been playing out behind the scenes on message boards, Reddit, and social media for months and months is going to come into public view on August 1st. And so this is my non-technical explanation for what's happening and how, if you're a Bitcoin holder or a Bitcoin-accepting merchant, that it could affect you. Now, again, we don't know if anything's going to happen, and we'll go over some of the options of what might go down, but it's good to have, I think, the information about what could transpire, so you can take steps to protect yourself. That either way, the steps that we'll outline coming up a little bit later are good things to look at and consider whether or not something happens, something bad happens on August 1st. So there's some good suggestions coming up here. Now, according to freekeen.com, to oversimplify a complex situation, there are basically two sides in this conflict. There's the one side who say that a new technology for Bitcoin called Segregated Witness, or SegWit for short, is necessary to fit more transactions into Bitcoin's blocks. Now, blocks are the guts of the blockchain, which is the distributed, decentralized public ledger that is the essence of what makes Bitcoin special. So just to further expound on that, the blockchain is the real key technology behind Bitcoin. This is what was essentially very revolutionary. The idea of having an immutable ledger that is public, cryptographically secure, can't be hacked, can't be faked, is checked with thousands of different nodes all around the globe with copies of this blockchain, this ledger. That's why it's immutable, because you can take one node down and there's still thousands more. I think there's over 7,900 nodes right now, full nodes, that have a copy of this 140 gigabyte blockchain on their computers. So it can't be hacked. It can't be taken down by governments. It wasn't created by governments in the first place. And it's a way for people to take the power of money out of the hands of the state and the banks and put it into their hands instead. So it's really hard to really make clear how revolutionary or evolutionary the idea of Bitcoin is to money. Because for all of our lives and our grandparents' lives and their grandparents' lives and beyond that, the state has been in control of these things. State and the banks have been in control of money. And Bitcoin's changed that. And that's a big, big deal. So going on here, the problem causing the fees to be bid up, as I explained, is that the blocks are full of transactions, leaving the lower fee transactions stuck waiting for hours or even days to confirm. As a result, people are paying 10 to 100 times more than they used to just to get their transactions through in a decent amount of time. The other camp, so you've got the SegWit camp, the Segregated Witness camp. The other camp are those who support increasing the block size. Now, it's currently 1 megabyte, and these folks would like it raised to 2 or beyond. The big blockers, as they are called, argue that the limit on the block size was originally put in place to fight spam transactions on the network, and they say that Bitcoin's anonymous creator, Satoshi Nakamoto's vision, was clearly against limiting the block size. And they can link to Satoshi's old writings to show pretty clearly that Satoshi Nakamoto had the intention for Bitcoin to scale up with the consumer demand, meaning that he supported increasing the block size as a solution to increasing the transaction volume or the potential transaction volume on the network.
Well, in his white paper, I know in the introduction, one of the reasons, one of the raison d'etre of Bitcoin was for people to be able to transact their money with low transaction fees. It's right.
Correct.
There in the first paragraph.
And it had accomplished that for a long time. And then recently, in the last 6 months, those transaction fees have been skyrocketing.
The small blockers, the SegWit folks, I've got an article here that I'm just looking at from Cointelegraph, SegWit, explained. But they want to turn Bitcoin into a settlement layer, I believe.
Which basically means for rich people to send high dollar values of Bitcoin.
It's like all the transactions take place off of the chain, mm-hmm. and then when they're done, they get incorporated into the chain after.
Thank you for explaining that. We'll get into it a little further here in moments. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. This is Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free and bring up whatever is on your mind. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. And you can Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. Live Sunday edition with you tonight. It's Ian.
Johnny Ray.
So you can join our email list because emails, believe it or not, are still, in my opinion, the best way to get the news out about something. Social media, of course, neuters your ability to actually contact people unless you pay them. Of course, now you got to pay to maintain email lists, but either way, you can get on our email list by going to freetalklive.com. Send out one email per week, usually, just to keep you in the loop with what's going on with Free Talk Live. And again, you can go to freetalklive.com. You'll find the email sign up there, right there on the front page. It should be pretty easy to find there towards the top in the middle at freetalklive.com. We're going to continue with what's going on with this civil war, this geek war between the Bitcoin people. There's two very distinct sides. There's, you could argue, more than two sides, but to oversimplify the situation, we'll call it two for the moment, that could result in Bitcoin forking coming up here in about 2 weeks' time. And we'll tell you what that means on the way. As we go first, though, to your calls and thoughts, let's talk to Scott in Massachusetts. I presume this is Scott the Bigot.
Evening,
yes, it is.
Mark's
not
Ray,
here. It's just me and Johnny
evening,
Ray.
I'd like to educate your listeners.
Let me guess. It's about the Jews, the Jews, and the Jews.
No, this is very important, what's going
something
on in
new?
America and the world today.
You've got something fresh?
Understand the craziness.
All right, give it
there's
to me.
There's a book called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
One of your three books that you've ever read?
Yeah, that, The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, and another book called The Beasts of the Apocalypse by Olivia Marie O'Grady.
Oh, that's one you've not mentioned before. Okay.
Yeah.
Normally you mentioned Henry Ford. Go ahead.
Yeah. These books, it's too many hours. I would need hours, and then you've got other list callers.
Yeah,
they would have to look up this on their own. But the gist of it in a nutshell is this. The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, first of all, the Jews claim it's a forgery. Of course they're going to say that, but it's authentic. It's absolutely genuine. The Tsarist Russian police, the Jews claim that it was they forged it. But it's a plot, in its simplest terms, a Jewish plot to control the world through media.
I thought you said you weren't going to be talking about the Jews. Turns out you are talking about them again.
Through finance.
Is there
the
ever
media.
Anything that you know think about besides Jewish people?
Yes, I do. I think about also how blacks have destroyed this country. look what's going on in Chicago, for instance. They're killing each other. They're a drag on the society, Hispanics. But I'm not just singling out blacks and Hispanics.
You also don't like women, right? You don't like women either, right?
I look at women today, and I'm not a homosexual by any means. I look at women today as they want to feminize the world. They want to emasculate men. They hate men. And women today, I find physically repulsive, but not only physically repulsive, I find them spiritually repulsive as well. They just want to emasculate men, demean men, put men in their place, if you will. And all of these things from the civil rights movement for blacks to the women's movement and also the homosexual movement, the communist movement, which originated in 1917.
Hey, Scott, when's the last time, I mean, because you're just kind of going through your laundry list of people that you don't like, which is pretty much everybody except for white Christian males, as I understand it. When was the last time you actually had a conversation with a black person?
I never did.
Never in your life? You've never in your life had a conversation with a black person?
Yeah, if it pertained to business or something like that. But
business.
You mean it pertaining to a friendship?
I didn't necessarily say friendship, but, you know, any kind of conversation. So, like, you know, when you say business, you mean, like, you're at a cash register or something
That's
like
right.
that? Okay. But
That's
you've
right.
never
That's
actually had,
as
like,
far as it goes.
You've never actually had dinner. You've never sat down and talked to.
Never.
Okay.
No.
Well, I don't know if he wants to talk to you, but he just called in. Hung Like Jesus is on the line here, and Hung, I put you on here with Scott. I don't know if he's the reason you were calling in, but I'm suspecting he might have been, so I wanted to bring you on the line here. Do we have Hung Like Jesus? Hung Like Jesus going once? Maybe he didn't want to talk to you, Scott. Hung Like Jesus going twice? All right, I'm going to put him back on hold. Maybe there's some sort of technical difficulty.
Anyway,
I wanted to have you guys talk together because, you know, I think that a lot of your hatred that you have for other people, Scott, is completely baseless. It's based in hating groups. It's based in not looking at the individual.
No, some of it's injury. Some of it is injury.
You were injured?
When I was swindled out of $190,000 from Lehman Brothers, I blame the Jew squarely for that loss, absolutely for that loss.
Okay, but not every Jew was involved with Lehman Brothers.
No, I understand that. But,
Scott,
have
you ever thought about judging people strictly on their behavior and not on their ethnicity?
Of course, there are people that are white and Christian that I deem white trash that I wouldn't have anything to do with.
Okay.
It's not just because of someone's merely white.
So someone's behavior can give you a reason to hate them, but could a Jew's behavior cause you to appreciate that Jew?
It would matter I don't answer your question. I automatically avoid contact
right.
with these people. Honest with you. I don't even.
You avoid contact
them. I avoid them.
Because are you like afraid at some level that you might actually realize they're not that different from you?
No, I just don't. I wouldn't want to go near them any more than I would want to.
All right.
Going with a pit of
Scott, I'm going to put you on now. I think his mic was muted before. Do we have Hung Like Jesus?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, I got you. Hung Like Jesus, Scott the Bigot has never talked to a black man besides behind a cash register in his life.
So we know whatever he says comes from a base of ignorance.
Sure.
That's not what I want to speak. I work with someone like this.
Really?
And they don't get out at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a constant diet of Alex Jones, Breitbart, and whatever right wing claptrap they subscribe to. And, you know, they're basically harmless in most cases. It's the ones that start talking about making groups and starting these gun clubs or whatever. Anything had to do with violence, when they start talking like that, those are the types of Jesus you watch. Scott, he's harmless. He's just, you know, he's just gorges himself on Alex Jones and whoever else he's listening to. And I'm glad you would stay away from me, Scott, because I would appreciate that.
Scott?
Yeah, I hear what Hung Like Jesus said. I am not ignorant. Believe me, I'm very well read.
You're the definition of ignorance, Scott. You've never had any experience talking with a black person before.
Let me get this straight, so we'll understand each other. You're saying that for example, Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party, they were a bunch of morons. That's what you're saying.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm saying? No, that thought was not even in my brain at all, man.
Yeah, he didn't say anything about Adolf Hitler, but...
No, I'm saying that I'm giving an example that just because someone is a bigot, a racist, does not mean that they're an imbecile. They're ignorant.
No, there's a difference between being stupid and ignorant, Scott. So, you know, you might want to check your dictionary on that, but being stupid is a problem that generally can't be cured. You're kind of born that way. But right. being ignorant can be cured by getting new information, being open to new ideas, and being willing to learn things. That can cure ignorance. But you have made the statement that you willfully do not talk to Jewish people or black people or other people that you don't like. And I think that's because you're afraid. You're scared. You're scared of actually possibly losing your viewpoint that is so important to who you've created for yourself, this persona of this bigoted man.
Not at all. Let me give you an example.
What, do you think you're going to get cooties from talking to a black guy? Why wouldn't you want to talk to a black person?
There's really nothing that I can learn. What I mean by that is if I want to watch, let's say I hate the news anyway, say I want to watch the stock market, I don't listen to what the commentator, I'll watch what's going on different companies and things like that. A black what about what he's going to talk about LeBron James or what Jesse Jackson has to say of the ghetto, what's going on?
See, Scott, if you keep your mouth closed, stay away from that keyboard. Not everybody won't know that you're stupid. Listen, I don't follow sports at all. Do I know who LeBron James is? And I'm not really into pop culture all that much. And you could probably have a good decent conversation with me if I could keep my food down talking to you. But you you may want to step out of your mother's house every once in a while and circulate. I know it's not that many people in wherever you are up in New England, but you may wanna just step out every once in a while, get some fresh air, turn off Alex Jones, and just spread your wings.
Good advice, hung like Jesus. If you want, hang on. We can continue with you, Scott. Thank you for your call. I've heard enough of you tonight. 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Huh, what do you know? Hung like Jesus doesn't fit black stereotypes because he's an individual. It's Free Talk Live.
Tired of spending hours hunting down the day's essential political news and views? Let Tom and Steve at Rational Review News Digest do it for you. Visit rationalreview.com for free, hand-curated news, commentary, and audio and video content. Choose from web, social media, and once-daily email editions. We've been the Freedom Movement's daily newspaper since 1991. Come find out why at rationalreview.com.
Talk Live. You can dial in here toll free. Bring up anything you want with Ian and Johnny Ray in the studio live Sunday edition of the program. Our toll free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We're going to get back into what's coming on the horizon for Bitcoin coming up here in about 2 weeks, August 1st, a big deadline. And we'll explain why that is, what it's all about, coming up here in moments. Your calls and thoughts are welcome. Let's go to the phones. To the fun, we talked to Russell first this hour in Peoria, Illinois. Russell, you're listening online at freetalklive.com. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. How you doing?
Hey.
I got a question about the guy you just called in called Hung for Jesus.
Hung like Jesus, yes.
Is he saying that people that listen to Alex Jones are racist? Is that basically what he was saying? I'm confused.
Well, I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth.
He wasn't saying that people who listen to Alex Jones are racists, but he was saying that racists listen to Alex Jones.
I would say that could be true. What do you think, Russell?
Yeah, that's probably true, but I listen to Alex Jones all the time, and I'm not racist, so
okay.
I'm just...
Yeah, I don't know what percentage of Alex Jones' listening audience is racist. I would doubt it's a majority or anything like that. He's got a big audience. I mean, there's a lot of people that listen to Alex Jones. You know, some of them listen to him just because he's entertaining, not necessarily because they agree with him. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, he's actually very good at predicting stuff, though.
Is he,
though? A lot of times.
What does he predict?
I think his record's pretty good. He's thrown a lot against the wall, and sometimes it sticks, sometimes it don't. But, you know. At least he's out there trying to tell people stuff, not like CNN or that's, you know, I hate CNN. I'm sorry. I despise CNN.
Russell, has Alex Jones made some prediction that really that resonated with you, that was really on target?
I mean, he predicted
that Trump was going to win, I bet.
I believe he is. We are. I mean, if we keep going the way we're going, I believe that he's correct on that. Does that make sense?
Now, what is globalism? Can you explain that?
It's just basically world government. I mean, basically. I mean, does that make sense?
Is that what it really means?
It means different things to different people, and depending on the context. Sometimes globalism is just a
something global?
Something that is strictly related to trade, mm-hmm. You know, a globalist as opposed to a protectionist, which, you know, Alex Jones, I'm guessing, falls on the protectionist side. But also, globalists can just be like a globalism can be UNism.
I don't think globalists want free trade. I don't think that. I don't agree with that.
Okay. Well, what do they want?
We could say that they're ultra rich people that want to keep their nest feathered. So they want to keep things the way they are. Does that make sense?
That doesn't really describe what globalism would be. I mean, ultra rich people are ultra rich whether or not there's, you know, a breakdown in borders.
I'm not talking about all ultra rich people. There are ultra rich people out there that are free market, you know, whatever. But I mean, talking about there are some that actually have gotten rich through the power of government, and they want to keep going the government because they get rich from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt about that, but you don't need to have a global government for ultra-rich people to get rich and stay rich, right? Like, there's no global government right now, and...
Yeah, you do, because they're parasites, so the only way they can continue to get rich is by continuing expanding the government, which, you know, that makes sense?
Well, no, I see what you're saying, but ultimately there are a bunch of governments in the world, and not all of them want to... expand into a world government, because that means they would lose their sovereignty. It would mean that they would lose their control. And those individual governments around, well, I mean, individual may not be the right word, but the governments of the world, many of them are going to push against the idea of globalism or a one world government, because they like their little fiefdom. They like their control that they have. Kim Jong-un, for instance, or you know, the guy down in Venezuela.
We are seeing some of that now, but I mean, it doesn't quite, I don't see it really making any difference. Like right now, we're doing nationalism across the world, which I think is a good thing. It's not perfect, but at least it pushes back against the global government. But it also has its own problems.
What is a person who wants to get rid of nations but doesn't want a global government?
Oh, that would be a libertarian. But
okay,
that would be me. But you know, okay. I'm all for that. You
gotcha.
Know?
All right.
I think there should be 3 billion little nations around the world. That's what
okay. We're on the same page on that one, then. That's for sure. I don't know. I've just heard, you know, the globalism word gets thrown around. It always just seems like this buzzword that doesn't really have a real clear, at least to me, a clear definition. If you go to dictionary.com, globalism's defined as a noun, the attitude or policy of placing the interests of the entire world above those of individual nations. Now, to me, that's just a meaningless definition, because there are only individual interests. I mean, as you just pointed out there, there aren't, you know, nations don't have interests. The world doesn't have an interest, because those things aren't real. I mean, yes, there's a globe, there's the planet, but it doesn't have its own separate consciousness, so it doesn't have any interests. So, you know.
It's politics, though. It's like Machiavelli, the book The Prince. Have you ever read that book?
No, I've not.
Oh, it's a short little book. It's written like in 16th century, I believe.
Yeah, but, what's it about?
Machiavelli used to be a bureaucrat,
mm-hmm.
and he got kicked out of his nice cushy job. So he wrote this book to try to get favor back with the ruling class. Didn't quite work. But he actually talks about how you can, when you get in power, how you maintain that power. Does that make sense?
Yes, I've heard Machiavellian, you know, used as sort of a description or an adjective. Russell, thanks for calling tonight. I appreciate hearing from you. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. Globalism, according to Wikipedia, is a group of ideologies that advocate the concept of globalization. It tends to advocate for such policies as increases in immigration, interventionism, and global governance. So, yeah, I'm definitely not in favor of a one-world government. I'm not in favor of any, you know, coercive state at any level. Certainly, I would oppose a larger coercive state. I want to get rid of the federal government. I would like to get rid of the state governments and local governments. So adding another level on top of that, I definitely oppose. I don't oppose the idea of immigration. I think that if you have a free place, that people who are free or who want to be free should be able to go to that place if they're welcome, if there's somebody there with a, you know, welcoming them with a job or a place in which they can stay. Interventionism, I'm certainly not in favor of intervening in, you know, other people's business, other people's countries, their homes, their properties. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think I would qualify as a globalism or globalist by those definitions, but I do like the idea of ending nationalism. I do like the idea of ending the belief in nations, but not replacing it with a world government. So I guess he's right. That would, you know, qualify me as a libertarian. The toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. You can take control of the airwaves here. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. Johnny Ray, I suspect you probably agree that it's, you know, the individual that matters most. It's their rights that are paramount, that these other concepts are just ideas, that the countries of the world, the idea of a global government, these are just the creations of the mind that are used as a justification to commit violence against our neighbors.
I think that the statists don't really appreciate the individual at all, the statist being someone who puts the interests of the nation over the individual. And I think once you understand how deep and how big a single individual is, then it kind of beggars the concept of the nation. Mm-hmm. When you understand how beautiful an individual is, then you can see how shabby a nation is next to it. A nation is just is a number. It's statistics, and it's not animated by a soul or love or comedy or poetry or anything like that.
Frequently, it displays the opposite of those animations. I mean, it's a very violent group, the state and its actors together. Even though they are individuals, when they come together as the state, the love, if they had any, just disappears from the picture, and they get very nasty. More
indeed.
Coming up. Free Talk Live. You may dial in toll-free here and join us. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. Skype username is lrn.fm. We're talking about Bitcoin earlier in the show tonight. We're going to continue that discussion. It's Ian and Johnny Ray in the studio with you tonight. But for those of you who are considering other options, because some people want to get out of Bitcoin, and whether you should or not is a big question. We'll address your options coming up here. What's happening on August 1st, or what might happen on August 1st with Bitcoin? And one of the options for you is to put your money into something else if you want, or you can hold on to your Bitcoin. We'll talk about the different choices, but if you want to go somewhere else, Dash is an interesting option. Dash is digital cash. It's a digital money platform designed to replace cash, kind of like Bitcoin was originally designed to do, and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast, private, and easy. Fees are low, and transactions are fast, and can even be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Dash is decentralized and run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. You can join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now, so go to Dash.org and find out why. And also, I was on a Dash podcast with Joel Valenzuela from Dash Force News earlier this week, and I have yet to actually repost that, but I will do that. And we'll let you guys know when that's available. But I'm sure if you go to his podcast, dashforcenews.com, you can still find it there. But I'll put it up on FreeKeen and link to it in our Free Talk Live newsletter a little bit later on this week.
What did you guys talk about? Dash, Bitcoin?
Mostly about kind of just cryptocurrency outreach to merchants in general, which around here means Bitcoin. But we're hoping that it's going to mean Dash soon, because there's a Dash point of sale system that's being developed by Steven Zeiler, who's longtime listeners may recall. He's called in a few times. He's a real talented programmer. Derek J's boyfriend, who lives out on the seacoast. So he's actually putting something together as we speak. And I've seen a demo of it. I've tried it, and it works. So we're getting closer to giving business owners another option besides just Bitcoin, as far as taking something cryptocurrency at a point of sale. So that's very exciting. And that's happening with Dash. It's not happening with anything else. So there's a lot of interesting things going on in the Dash world. So check out Dash.org for more about that. Let's get back into the details about what's happening, or what might happen, on August 1st with Bitcoin. It might fork, and we'll talk more about what that means, because it could be a little bit, well, it's already dramatic. The two different sides that we were talking about earlier in this Bitcoin's geek war that has been going on for a couple of years behind the scenes, that geek war is about to get a much more public view over the next couple of weeks. And it's been an ugly conflict from people on both sides of it. They've been attacking one another on forums and, Reddits and, various different places online, comments sections. And it is frustrating, because Bitcoin has been suffering the entire time, because it's basically at a standstill as far as development, as far as the ability for it to scale up, to handle the demand in the marketplace, because it's basically maxed out at the moment. There's too many transactions for the Bitcoin network to handle it, so they've got to do something to increase that capacity. And that's where the disagreement has come in. That's where these two sides, one side, they want what are called bigger blocks to be part of the blockchain of Bitcoin, which is the decentralized heart of Bitcoin. It's this ledger, this immutable distributed ledger that's in thousands of places all around the globe. And then there's also the people who support segregated witness, which is what they say is a technology to help Bitcoin scale. And on both sides of the argument, you'll find people that say the other technology is bad. They say that the bigger blocks are bad, and the others say that the SegWit is bad. And some people have agreed that both things should happen, and that's what this New York agreement was that you'd mentioned earlier, Johnny Ray. But you were saying, before we went to one of the breaks in the first hour, you were talking about some people want Bitcoin to be a settlement layer, and you had begun describing what that is. Because honestly, I don't even know what that means. So it sounds like you have some grasp on the concept. What does that mean when they say they want Bitcoin to be a settlement layer?
Well, I'm basing that off of Roger Ver. He came on the show several weeks ago, and he used that term, settlement layer. He said that the small blockers want to turn Bitcoin into a settlement layer. Or he said they wanted to turn the blockchain into a settlement layer. A settlement layer would be, for example, if I owe you $8, mm-hmm. and Daryl owes me $10,
yeah.
then on the blockchain, that would turn into
$2?
Yeah, like Daryl owes you $2.
I see.
Daryl owes me $2 and owes you $6. But it simplifies. The majority of the transactions take place off of the chain, and they're simplified, and they're put, and then they are cemented into history and real transactions on the blockchain itself.
And that somehow reduces the amount of data going on to the blockchain?
Right.
Is that the idea?
Right.
But isn't the problem with that it trusts whoever it is that's doing the off-the-blockchain transactions to some extent?
Right, and that is
centralization there?
Yes, and one of the charges leveled by the big blockers against the small blockers is that the small blockers are coming from, or some of the prominent speakers, some of the people on the core team are coming from a business that markets off-chain
solutions. Like, which is a company called Blockstream, right?
Right.
Yeah, so this is a company that has apparently been funded by a big bank to the tune of $100 billion or something ridiculous like that, or maybe it was $100 million, but it was a lot of money that they put into this thing, and they've hired some of these Bitcoin core programmers, and the suggestion is that these people have essentially sold out. And they're just doing the bidding of this corporation and trying to manipulate Bitcoin into something that it wasn't originally intended to be. It wasn't intended to be a settlement layer. Satoshi Nakamoto, in his white paper, which you've read, Johnny Ray, pointed out that he wanted this to be used for poor people around the world and other people around the world that, you know, couldn't afford to get banks, that couldn't afford, you know, the old money system, that want to transmit money for very, very low cost. And that was what Bitcoin could do for many years up until within the last, well, basically the last year or so, but more so in the last 6 months, where the fees to send Bitcoin have been out of control. So I wrote a piece over at freekeen.com that we've been going through here about this, and I point out that I'm not a computer programmer, so I don't really have an opinion about which technical change that's been proposed is the best, and ultimately it doesn't matter what I think. The people with the most sway in the Bitcoin universe are the Bitcoin miners. Now, what they decide to do is likely the way things will go. Likely. Let me explain from a more philosophical perspective before getting back to what could happen on August 1st. And we're going to do that coming up here in moments. Your calls and thoughts are welcome. Whether it's the future of Bitcoin or whatever happens to be on your mind, we've got time for you here on this live Sunday edition of Free Talk Live. But these next couple of weeks, these next 2 weeks leading up to August 1st, and then an unknown amount of time after August 1st, could be a little bumpy of a ride for those of you out there with Bitcoin. And we're going to continue in moments here on Free Talk Live.
You have probably heard about Bitcoin and virtual currencies, but you don't really know what to do next. Maybe you feel like they have already passed you by. Nothing could be further from the truth. Bitcoin is an emergent technology still. It is still in beta and sweeping the globe. All the information you need to learn about Bitcoin is at Bitcoin.com. Go to your browser, type in Bitcoin.com, choose a wallet program, get Bitcoins, and then spend Bitcoins. Bitcoin.com, the only site you need to know for virtual currencies. Bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live, dial toll free, bring up anything you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We're talking about the world's most important cryptocurrency, arguably the world's most important currency. I understand the U.S. dollar's the big boy on the block, you know, and that a lot of countries rely on it, but that is at the whim and the behest of politicians. So they can inflate the money supply of the dollar and all the other fiat currencies in the world, you know, whenever they feel like it. And that basically is a hidden tax against you, the user. And that's a danger. That's a danger to your wealth. It's a danger to your freedom. And so Bitcoin is, when I say it's the most important currency, I say that because, not because it's as the most widely used, it's not even close to the most widely used, but it's the most important in that it's the most fundamental change to money that we have ever seen in our lifetime or in our grandparents' lifetimes or generations beyond that. It's so fun, such a fundamental change that it's hard to really, it's hard to overstate how important it is. I mean, it's incredible. Johnny Ray with me. I'm Ian. We're going to continue. We'll take your calls if you want to make them about whatever's on your mind at 855-450-FREE like freedom, 855-450-3733. If you would like, we can take Bitcoin and Dash contributions over on our Bitcoin page at bitcoin.freetalklive.com. I don't mention that very often because it's just sort of been there forever and we just don't talk about it enough, but it's there. So if you've got some Bitcoin burning a hole in your pocket, you want to get rid of your Bitcoin before August 1st, feel free to send it on over over at bitcoin.freetalklive.com. But we're going to talk about what could happen on August 1st. What is the big fear here? I mean, I don't think that we should be spreading fear. I don't want to spread fear. I do want to spread awareness, however. I do want people to be as informed as they can be about this, without being necessarily afraid. Because if you're informed, you can make better decisions about what to do, as opposed to if you're afraid, then you might make irrational choices that might not be the best in your best interest. Now, we're not going to tell you what to do about this situation that we're going to describe, because honestly, I don't know what the right choice is. I've got my plan, and Johnny Ray, we'll find out what your plan is coming up here in moments. But we're talking about sort of the basics about Bitcoin to give you a little bit of perspective and background on what's getting ready to happen to hopefully solve the fee situation, because the Bitcoin network is full. It's so popular. It's having growing pains. And there's a couple plans afoot to try to solve that. Unfortunately, they don't they're conflicting plans, and it could result in a bit of a messy situation. So, as I point out here in my 2,600-plus word piece over at freekeen.com that I published this weekend, one of Bitcoin's greatest strengths is that it was not created or issued by big banks or governments. It was the world's first decentralized digital currency. It's cryptographically secure and can't be hacked or taken offline because it's of its distributed, decentralized global network. It's truly an amazing creation and has changed the future of money as fundamentally as the way the internet has changed communication. And beyond that, we don't really even realize how much it has changed these things yet, in the same way that the internet's still a relatively new invention on the scale of, you know, time, right? Like it's only been around for a relatively small amount of time, and it's already had a tremendous impact on our lives. But we're still in the very beginning phases of the internet. We're still in the beginning phases of Bitcoin as well. It's only been around for less than a decade at this point. So where it can go from here, the sky's the limit, if it can get through these initial, you know, this kind of initial bumpy road that it's going down at the moment. There's also a major difference between how centrally issued currencies like the U.S. dollar are administered. The U.S. dollar, controlled by the Federal Reserve for the benefit of the evil, aggressive U.S. federal government, is administered at the whim of politicians, whichever ones happen to be in power at the moment. They can inflate the money supply at will, destroying the value of any dollars that you might be holding. Now, this is a fundraising method for them, a hidden tax. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is decentralized, which means that it's not subject to the will of one man or a group of unaccountable men. And that's good because it means Bitcoin's value can't be debased to benefit anyone in charge because there's no one in charge.
Yeah, Bitcoin was designed to function, to work something like gold. And that's why the Bitcoin miners are called miners.
Mm-hmm.
You, at the Federal Reserve, men make decisions about what the interest rate will be in the
based
U.S. economy.
Based on arbitrary factors.
Yeah, based on...
whatever's going to help their friends and punish their enemies or benefit them personally.
Right, or what they, in their ignorance of the future, think is the right course for the American dollar. But gold was something that could not be influenced by personalities or individuals because you could only have as much as you could dig out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin is the same way. It
supply is limited.
The Bitcoins come out at a rate that is predetermined, and
right.
It's not. And
so there is a little inflation, but we know what the rate of inflation is. In that, you know, if inflation is the increase in the money supply, that does happen with Bitcoin, but it's predictable. Unlike politicians, which they can just inflate as much as they want, as we've seen in Venezuela and Zimbabwe and other countries.
Right. In the U.S., we have I think they call it high-powered money, where when you're talking about units of a currency that can be deflated or, sorry, inflated, the price lowered because of inflation of the money supply. A high-powered money is the money that first gets squirted out into the system. So if you're there, right there at the spigot, then the high-powered money still retains.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's got the value of currently existing dollars.
Right.
And then down the line, when other people accept these dollars, it's then that they've become devalued.
Right. So if you're a military industrial complex, you're receiving the high powered money. You're the one who's the beneficiary of that. And then as it spends into the economy further, it increases the money supply.
Right. And then in the sense of nations, us Americans are getting the high powered money. Usually, for the most part, sometimes the high powered money is going to, some militants.
Well, it's not
in the
high
Middle
powered
East.
By the time you get it. Right,
but it's yeah. but the money, most of the money, I think, is coming out in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So I'm closer to it than the rest of the world.
But it really doesn't benefit you. It hurts you because you have
in the long run. I think it does. I think it saps. I think Americans' will to go out there and succeed based on their own strengths and their own ideas. It's tough because it's like you're in the middle. It's like the politicians have sort of a cheat code for the game of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they can just keep changing the amount of money that they have to spend. So they can keep spending money on welfare plans.
Yep.
To keep the populace content. They can keep spending money on weapons to intimidate others around the world.
Right.
But they're not, but the Americans and the American economy is not really, it's not, the supply and demand is kind of masked a little bit because they can just print up the money. So we sort of live in a fantasy land.
Yes. And the damage that is done to savings, to people that have savings. When the government prints money out, it debases the value of all the money in circulation, and so therefore anybody that's been holding onto the U.S. dollar gets punished for that. So there's actually a disincentive in the current money system in the U.S. and other countries around the world that also have fiat money system, which is like all of them. There's a disincentive against saving, which is, of course, a good financial tactic, right, is to have some savings and be able to rely on that in times of difficulty or whatever. But the system that we have encourages debt and discourages savings. So there's all kinds of screwed up factors about the way money currently is. And Bitcoin solves a lot of those problems. And its decentralized nature means that while Bitcoin can be upgraded over time, it can be a messy process. So on the U.S. Dollar side, some decision maker or a board of people makes a decision of, oh, we got to raise rates, we got to print more money. You know, they make the decision. There might be a little bit of debate between them, but you know, they ultimately make a decision. It comes from down on top, and that decision is implemented. It may not be implemented in the most efficient manner because it's government, but it's a simple, you know, simple process. Whereas with Bitcoin, it can get a little messy. The whole process of making Bitcoin better, of improving the Bitcoin software, of upgrading the quality and the network capacity.
It's about consent.
Yes, and we're going to get into how that works and what these different sides are, what they want, and what it's all going to mean coming up on August 1st. That's all on the way here. You can also share your thoughts if you want to jump in. 855-450, free like freedom. It's Free Talk Live. Hey, it's Free Talk Live, live Sunday edition of the program. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's our toll-free number. We're getting out not too far into the weeds, but just talking about why Bitcoin's important, what's coming up on the horizon as far as the potential fixes for the growing pains that Bitcoin has been experiencing. It's the world's most popular cryptocurrency, and it's full. The transactions are maxed out. The network can't handle any more than is currently being thrown at it. And so there's some proposals as to how to fix that problem, but thing is, people don't agree on which proposal is the best one. We're going to talk more about that. You can share your thoughts with us. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Like Freedom, with you tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnny Ray.
If you would like, you can get behind Free Talk Live at the AMP program. AMP stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote, and the AMP program does accept Bitcoin. It also takes credit card and PayPal, so it's $5 a month, and that is a way for you to support what we do here on Free Talk Live, talking about liberty, talking about cryptocurrency, peace. These are topics we discuss pretty much on a weekly basis here on Free Talk Live. So if you want to help us out and help us get on more radio stations, help bring new internet listeners on board, then become an amplifier, and you'll get cool perks like access to the AMP-only call-in lines, the AMP-only Facebook group, the AMP-only podcast, and more. You can go and get signed up with, again, credit card, PayPal, Bitcoin, your choice over at amp.freetalklive.com, ampamp.freetalklive.com. So we were talking about the decentralized nature of Bitcoin, this amazing technology that Satoshi Nakamoto, an anonymous creator, put out to the world back in 2009. He has subsequently disappeared from view as of, I think, around 2011. And nobody knows where he or she or whoever Satoshi Nakamoto is. Nobody knows who that person is. But they released this code to the world, and it has since become the most relevant and important currency on the globe. And it's full, which means it is kind of broken at the moment. Like, you can still use it, but you got to pay fees that are much higher than you should have to pay to use a cryptocurrency. And that's what they're trying to fix. And we're going to get into, you know, what some of the proposals are because, well, the two sides, they don't agree, or not all of them do. And what's that going to mean? Well, it may mean a possible schism. And we'll tell you what that's all about here. So I've got a story that's pretty detailed about all this over at freekeen.com. It's at the top of the page right now about why we're shutting down the Bitcoin vending machines here in New Hampshire. Well, most of them are going to be shutting down. The ones that I'm involved with are certainly going to be shutting down, and explains why and all the background behind it. So we're talking about the decentralized nature of Bitcoin and how making decisions in the Bitcoin community, it's not just done by one man. There is not, even if Satoshi Nakamoto were still around, he would not be able to unilaterally decide how Bitcoin should be changed. It's out there. It's out there in the wild, and there's a system in place that allows mostly the miners to decide on what happens with Bitcoin, but they're not the only players in the Bitcoin ecosystem. There are various types of stakeholders, including miners, the programmers, the people who are trying to upgrade the software, full nodes. Those are the people who run a full copy of the blockchain on their computers. It takes like 140 gigabytes at the moment, and they help validate the transactions. And the users, which include merchants, individuals, exchanges, merchant service providers, etc. Now that you know the various types of stakeholders and the possible options to scale the network, we talked earlier about segregated witness, which is one technology to supposedly help fit more transactions in per block, and then another one is to increase the block size. You might be wondering, well, how do these people come together, all these different groups and individuals, and improve Bitcoin technically to allow it to scale up to consumer demand? And the answer is they might not. They might not come together. And those who are refusing to come to the table to talk and compromise are planning to possibly break away on August 1st. So what could happen? Well, lots of different things. But here's what I hope will be the most likely scenario. And that is SegWit 2X, as it is called. So in late May at the consensus event in New York, an agreement was finally reached after months and months, if not years, of arguing and discussing and debating over how these changes should be made. A bunch of major Bitcoin-related businesses and holders of approximately 83% of the mining power in the Bitcoin world came to this agreement, and it gives the SegWit advocates what they want, which is SegWit, and then within 6 months increases the block size from 1 megabyte to 2. So both sides came to the table and they agreed, most of them did, that let's do both. Let's do both of these things that people have been arguing about for a long time. And it looks like most people are behind this, but not everybody. So the SegWit 2X, or the New York Agreement Plan, includes a timeline that they have been following thus far. They've released a beta software to the miners, and as of right now, more than 86% of the world's mining power is signaling their support for SegWit 2X. Now, you can see the chart for yourself. I linked to it there. But if you want, you can go to coin.dance/blocks. That's a website, coin.dance, D-A-N-C-E, /blocks. And that shows you who's how many miners, what percentage of them are signaling support for various different proposals for Bitcoin. Because, again, it's the miners. You have to have, ideally, you should have a supermajority of them behind whatever the proposed change is in order to make it happen as smoothly as possible. And SegWit 2X, this new plan, does appear to have enough support, with 86% signaling in favor of it. If a proposal doesn't have the miner support, then it's basically dead in the water. So the programmers can make whatever kind of programming changes, proposals that they want, but if the miners don't back it, it's nothing. I mean, it essentially will have no effect. In less than a week from now, on July 21st, SegWit 2X supporting miners are expected to be running the new SegWit 2X software and signal their activation of SegWit. If they do as agreed, SegWit will activate likely before August 1st, with 86% of the mining power currently behind this proposal, and everything going as planned so far, this seems like the most likely scenario. However, if SegWit 2X goes into action before, or even if SegWit 2X goes into action before August 1st, there's still at least one wild card in play called UASF, which stands for User Activated Soft Fork. And that's the big deal. That's why August 1st is this deadline day. That's because the people who are in favor of the user activated soft fork, these are people who are running the full nodes, which are, as I described earlier, these are the people with the full copy of the blockchain. They're planning something on August 1st to sort of break away. And so while the miners are arguably the most important decision makers in the Bitcoin universe, the full nodes also perform an important role of block and transaction validation. In this case, right now about 15% of the approximately 7,900 full nodes are signaling their support for the user-activated soft fork. So they've got a very small number of the full nodes who are backing this proposal. You would think, well, what's there to be concerned about here? I mean, they don't have 86% of the miners are behind the SegWit 2X proposal, which would mean that presumably the user-activated soft fork people have a very small portion of mining behind them, if anything at all. They've even got a small portion of the number of full nodes, 15% as of like 2 days ago when I finished this article, and it had only gone up from like 11% a couple weeks ago. So there's not exactly a huge rush of support behind this. So why are we even talking about it? Why is this something worth discussing? Is it really, do these user-activated soft fork people actually pose a threat to the Bitcoin system as it is?
Well, I know some people, some of these big blockers, and I am really pretty ignorant about this August 1st thing coming up, but I know some of the big blockers think that SegWit is just poison all by itself. And I've been looking at this Cointelegraph article, and I'd like to read a paragraph from it, from the section, "What is SegWit's solution to the Bitcoin scaling problem?" SegWit's solution to this is twofold. First of all, it enables an immediate increase of the block size limit to 4 megabytes. There's one caveat here. 4 megabytes is the absolute maximum, while the actual block size will depend on the network conditions. It is predicted by experts to be in the range of about 2 to 2.1 megabytes immediately after SegWit's activation. So if SegWit puts a hard cap at 4 megabytes per block, that could be a reason for people not to want it. The Bitcoin Unlimited type people who don't want the size of a block in any way to be an obstacle to the scalability. It seems like SegWit could be troubling if it puts, you know, a maximum size of a block at 4 megabytes. You know, that could be a problem down the road.
I wonder if that's true when it comes to the SegWit 2X proposal. Because I wouldn't think that because I know a lot of the people who are the big block folks support 8 megabyte blocks or larger.
Uh-huh.
So why they would sign on to something that would permanently limit, I would imagine they wouldn't want a permanent limit on the size of the blocks.
Yeah, I would imagine so too.
So I don't understand why they would have signed on to SegWit 2X. Maybe SegWit 2X has slightly different parameters to it, and maybe that's the original proposal for SegWit, because there are two groups of SegWit supporters out there. One of them is this user-activated soft fork folks, and we'll get into them here in a moment, because that's what's going to cause, if something happens on August 1st, it's going to be them likely that cause it. Hour 3 is coming up. Free Talk Live.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low, and transactions are confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Get started at Dash.org. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help us create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org and get your own Dash wallet today. That's Dash.org.
It is Free Talk Live, and you can take control of the airwaves. You can bring up anything you want, even though we are talking a lot about Bitcoin here tonight. I wanted to give everybody as much of a heads up on this discussion as possible. We're going to be following it very closely on Free Talk Live over the next few weeks, and we're basically 2 weeks away at this point from the deadline of August 1st, which has been selected as basically a boycott day. Where certain factions within the Bitcoin network are planning to possibly break away, are planning what's called a soft fork, a user-activated soft fork. And with you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnny Ray.
And we just touched on this user-activated soft fork idea. That, for those of you just tuning in, Bitcoin, the amazing decentralized cryptocurrency that has, you know, taken the world by storm. We're big fans of it here. You've probably, if you've listened to the show before, you've heard a thing or two about it. And we don't want to get into, you know, the technical weeds on this if we can avoid it. But to just, you know, specify here that there are some problems with the Bitcoin network. It hasn't successfully been able to scale to the growth, to be able to handle the growth that the network has been experiencing with the number of transactions. And so there's these two different sides technically that have different ideas as to what to do to make that scaling happen. There are the people who support segregated witness, and then there are those who support the increased block size. They had come together, most of them, to an agreement back in late May at a consensus event where they came to an agreement. They signed an agreement. They said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to implement both of these ideas. We're going to implement the SegWit, the segregated witness. We're going to implement the increase in the block size. And that seems to have made enough people happy. The network seems to have responded positively with the lower fees that have been happening over the last few weeks. It seems like everything's okay. It seems like things are moving in the right direction. And that's why I say there's a chance on August 1st that nothing's going to happen. However, you then have this user-activated soft fork, which has chosen this day of August 1st to move forward with their own plan, because they don't like SegWit 2X, which is the plan from the consensus event. That's the agreement. That's what's, you know, the big companies are moving forward with. That's what 86% of the mining power behind Bitcoin is moving forward with. That's happening right now. It's moving ahead, and they're hoping to implement that plan before August 1st. When the user-activated soft fork people, who those that don't back down, because, you know, presumably what the user-activated soft fork people want is segregated witness, which they should get from the SegWit 2X thing. But the thing is, a lot of the people who want the segregated witness don't want the increased block size. They don't want that 2X part of SegWit2x. They don't want to go from 1 megabyte blocks to 2 megabyte blocks, which is part of the SegWit2x plan. So they're staying away from the SegWit2x plan, and that's why they oppose it. Back to my story here from Free Keen. Despite not appearing to have any significant mining power or even the rest of the full nodes behind them, because they're only about 15% of the full nodes support this user-activated soft fork, at least according to the signaling happening now. Now, they might like you to believe that they've got way more than 15%, but they're just hiding until August 1st. They want you to believe that they've got a bunch of miners that are hiding until August 1st, and then they're all going to come online and prove the true strength of the user-activated soft fork. That's the idea of what might happen from their perspective, as I understand it. Now, maybe you're a big user-activated soft fork fan and you want to call in and kind of do a better job explaining of where y'all are coming from. Please feel free. We've got open phone lines here all the time. 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. But as of right now, if you look at the numbers, they've only got about 15% of the full nodes on their side. We have no idea how many miners support them, but we know that 86% of the mining power is backing SegWit2x. So that, you know, presumably means they don't have much more than about 14 or 15% of the mining power behind the soft fork. So they're planning a schism in the Bitcoin network on August 1st. They plan to accomplish this by ordering their nodes to refuse to validate any blocks that do not include a signal that indicates that the miner who mined that block supports their proposal, the UASF proposal. So basically, those full nodes, as I was explaining before, they do some validation of the transactions and the mined blocks on the network. They're going to say uh-uh to any blocks that aren't in their camp, that aren't signaling favor for the user-activated soft fork. They're going to refuse those blocks. And if they have miner support behind them when they start refusing blocks, that, as I understand it, is what causes the soft fork, where Bitcoin splits into two Bitcoins. And we'll get into that here in a moment. So if they... If a soft fork would mean that the point in time at which the blockchain, which is the public ledger that goes back to the very beginning of the currency in 2009 and contains every transaction that has ever occurred, it'll then fork into two. So each of those blockchains then would have all of the transactions from 2009 through August 1st at the time of that fork. But then after that time, they would have different transactions likely being logged to each chain. And that means there would be two Bitcoin networks at that point, each of them competing to be the real Bitcoin. It also means that anyone holding on to Bitcoin in a non-custodial wallet, as they call them, where you control the private keys, if you're holding Bitcoin before that fork, you will then have the same amount of both types of Bitcoin. So for the sake of the discussion, let's call it original Bitcoin and UASF Bitcoin. If you had 10 Bitcoins before the split, afterwards, you would have 10 original Bitcoin and 10 UASF Bitcoin. Now, this is where things can get dangerous and even more confusing, as if it wasn't flummoxing enough already. And that sounds like a pretty good thing, right? You get two Bitcoins out of this deal if you hold on to it. That sounds like a good thing. Problem is, the value of both of them may plummet dramatically. We don't know what's going to happen if this fork occurs on August 1st. How the market will handle this, you know, which Bitcoin will be valued higher than the other, what will be traded for what will come out, you know, the most popular winner. It seems like it would be the SegWit2x one because they've got the miner support behind them. And there's some technical aspects to this that get, you know, again, a little bit too off in the weeds. But basically, if one of these blockchains, the UASF one, for instance, doesn't have a whole lot of miner support behind it, well, then it's very weak. It can be subject to an attack. It can be subject to, basically a wipeout, essentially, where anything that's transacted on that particular blockchain eventually might end up going away if, for instance, the other chain can somehow overtake it. Now, I don't understand exactly how all that plays out, but essentially it becomes dangerous once the Bitcoin forks, if that happens, if that occurs, and it may not on August 1st, but if that occurs, you do not want to spend or purchase any Bitcoin. You don't want to receive Bitcoin, spend it, buy it. You don't want to do anything on the Bitcoin network until the dust settles, so to speak. And the reason why is something called a replay attack. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, Johnny Ray.
No, I am not.
I'm not intimately familiar with exactly how it works, but basically the idea behind a replay attack is if I have, so Bitcoin soft forks, so now you got the two Bitcoins, you got the original Bitcoin, you got the UASF Bitcoin. If I try to send you, let's say the original Bitcoin, I want to send you a whole Bitcoin, I want to send you the original Bitcoin, a whole Bitcoin. I transmit that to the network. Somebody else could pick that up, that signal, and they could notice, oh, this person is sending one Bitcoin to this address. Well, then we're going to go ahead and send one Bitcoin to my address on the other blockchain, basically. They sort of intercept it and use some kind of trickery to be able to spend Bitcoin that's not theirs.
Uh-huh.
And again, I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it's a big thing. If you read a lot of these articles about, like the technical articles about what could happen on August 1st, replay attacks are a very real thing. And the exchanges and the Bitcoin companies need to put in protections in place to make sure that these replay attacks can't occur. And how quickly they will put those protections in, we don't know. I mean, they may be ready to go. It may be just a matter of hours. It may be days. So that's the big question mark here is, if the Bitcoin forks, how long is it going to take for the dust to clear? How long is it going to take for us to know, you know, when it's safe to actually be able to spend Bitcoin? It's kind of a big, you know, concern. And that's the reason why we're shutting down the Bitcoin vending machines on July 31st in advance of August 1st. And then we're going to keep them shut down until we're sure that the dust has settled. Because not only could Bitcoin split once, it could split more than once. There are other reasons why that could occur. Everybody mostly thinks about it as, oh, it could only split into two. Well, no, it could split into three. It could split into four. How that happens, I don't know. But as I understand it, it could happen. We'll continue here. You can share your thoughts. 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free and join us here on the radio waves. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We're doing our best to explain what's happening with Bitcoin without getting into too much technical detail, without being, you know, too far into the weeds. I hope we're doing a good job of it. It's Ian and Johnny Ray in the studio here tonight. And if you would like to watch the show, we've got our webcam. You can go to cam.freetalklive.com. You can see us here in our Keene, New Hampshire studios. And I don't know, I guess that excites some people. So go to cam.freetalklive.com and enjoy that there. And then there's, of course, the YouTube channel at youtube.freetalklive.com where you can watch past episodes. And if you just want our audio episodes, we got plenty of those going back for a decade plus over at freetalklive.com. And it's all for free. So we're talking about Bitcoin and the conflict that is finally bubbling over. And I think it's ugly. It's no fun. But finally, something's happening, because it's just been people arguing on the internet for like 2 years about what to do to scale Bitcoin to the demand in the marketplace. There's a couple of competing proposals. There's segregated witness. There's increasing the block size. A bunch of people got together and said, let's do both. And they finally came to a compromise, and that's called SegWit 2X. That's being implemented now as we speak. But coming up on August 1st, the user-activated soft fork is planned by a group of people who, as I understand it, don't much like the idea of increasing the block size. They like SegWit. They want that. But they don't want the block size increased. And so they're not joining on to SegWit 2X. They're going to do their own thing and possibly split Bitcoin into two blockchains, into two copies of the transaction log, this public ledger that has gone back to all the way back to 2009, to the very beginning of Bitcoin. If these user-activated soft forkers get their way and they have themselves a fork on August 1st, that means we now have two Bitcoins, both of them claiming to be the real Bitcoin. You know, like one of those scenes out of The Thing where you've got all the people claiming that they're really with the people in the miners or whatever they were doing out there in the Netherlands in the wintertime. And, you know, who's the alien and who's the real miner or whatever. And, you know, now we've got a similar situation where both sides would be claiming to be the real Bitcoin. And we would find out what the marketplace decided was the real Bitcoin. What do the people who are using Bitcoin actually want to see happen? What are the miners supporting? Seems like the miners are supporting SegWit 2X, but you know, we're not going to know for sure until this all goes down on August 1st. That's why I don't want to spread fear, uncertainty, and doubt. At the same time, I also don't want people to be ignorant going into August 1st of what the potential is for this to happen. it could just pass us by. August 1st could come and go, and Bitcoin, you know, SegWit2x activates, and everything's fine. But a lot of these user-activated soft fork people appear to be very dedicated to their idea of breaking away. So they may be giving that their best shot coming up here on August 1st. You need to know about this stuff, especially if you have Bitcoin and you've just been kind of sitting on it and maybe not paying attention to what the news has been. So a guy named Jimmy Song wrote up a blog post, and I linked to it in my post over at freekeen.com. In my this lengthy post we've been reading off and on here throughout the show tonight, I linked to other posts that get more technical and more detailed on what could actually happen. I boil it down and try to simplify it as much as possible. But for those of you that really want to read, you know, get off into the weeds, I do link to some of this. So in Jimmy Song's post, he covers multiple potential scenarios about what could happen. And he does an excellent job of explaining the likely outcome or a likely outcome of the UASF scenario if they don't have much mining support. Because again, you have to have miners to support your idea in order for it to go anywhere. So Jimmy says, quote, in this scenario, the users have something like 0 to 13% of the network's hash rate on August 1st. And right now, it looks like they might have, if they get, you know, some miner support, maybe as much as 15%. The obvious consequence of having such a low hash rate is that their blocks will come very slowly. So again, once Bitcoin splits, you've got two sets of miners then mining each of those blockchains. The one, if it's got 86% of the mining force behind it, it's going to be very strong, it's going to be very fast, it's going to be, you know, very difficult to take down and attack. The other one, not so much. So the consequence of having a low hash rate is that their blocks will come very slowly, say one per every 80 minutes instead of one per 10 minutes, which is what it is right now. This leads to two big problems. The first problem is that there will be a tremendous backlog of transactions on the user's fork, the minority fork. Transactions will take a very long time to confirm, and since block space is scarce, fees will be very high. The cost and time of transacting users' fork coins may put a downward pressure on its price. And so that's, again, just speculation on what could possibly happen if things sort of play out the way they might play out. But again, they could play out in a variety of different ways. So while there's a chance that the UASF, user-activated soft fork Bitcoin, could be snuffed out due to a lack of miner support, there's also a chance it could continue on, competing in the marketplace to be considered the real Bitcoin. And this will be quite difficult if they have low miner support for the mentioned reasons. For an unknown amount of time after a fork, it's risky to send or receive Bitcoin. And this has to do with the fact that until the dust settles after the fork, you can be subject to replay attacks until the exchanges and wallet providers come up with a way to protect against those attacks. Now, there's also the risk that one of the two sides of the fork will be eliminated through competition, which would destroy any transactions that happened on that chain. Further, some companies may side with one chain or another rather than allowing both, which will lead to extreme confusion about which Bitcoin is which. Is this starting to sound like a nightmare? Well, I've only scratched the surface on what could happen. But as a non-programmer who's done a fair amount of reading on both sides of this subject, it seems to me that there are two most likely scenarios. Now, again, take this with a grain of salt. I'm not an engineer. This is just me as the, you know, average Bitcoin guy who's been in this for a little while, looking at this. It seems to me like these might be the two most likely options. You tell me, Johnny Ray, because I know you've looked into some of this as well. But number one, SegWit2x activates before August 1st, which is what their timeline says they're going to do. And the UASF supporters abandon their plan out of expected failure because supposedly the UASF people want SegWit. SegWit2x is going to give them SegWit, so maybe they'll call it quits. Well, there's a headline over at CoinDesk right now saying that the UASF people are going to go forward regardless. So there's some real hardcores out there that, you know, they do not care about this SegWit2x idea, and they want Bitcoin their way or the highway, and they're going to go ahead and try to hard fork it. So that leads to number two, which is where SegWit2x activates before August 1st, and the UASF supporters and a small percentage of the mining power fork Bitcoin. It could then be days or weeks before the dust settles, and that we can safely send and receive Bitcoin again. And what's that going to do to the price of Bitcoin? Because a lot of the exchanges are going to shut down on July 31st. They're not going to allow deposits in or out. They're not going to allow trading because they don't want to allow trading on two different chains where these replay attacks can happen and people can lose their Bitcoin. So there's a serious risk of loss here. And so people need to know about that. Now, of course, I'm oversimplifying here, and I haven't even touched on the user-activated hard fork or the UAHF that is planned as a response to the UASF being more successful than expected. And just for the purposes of not getting too far in the weeds, we're not going to talk about the user-activated hard fork, but it's an interesting counterproposal and a counterplan to the UASF people. Now, given the situation is going to be very fluid and potentially risky, we at Shire Bitcoin Vending here in New Hampshire are shutting down our Bitcoin vending machines in Manchester, Concord, and Keene temporarily starting July 31st. We'll be monitoring the situation and we'll post updates. Of course, we'll be talking about it throughout here on Free Talk Live. But what can you do? So we're going to get to the useful suggestions here. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're just going to give you some ideas on how you can handle this as an average user who might have some money in Bitcoin. What do you do about this? Coming up.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Hey, it's Free Talk Live, the live Sunday edition of the program. As always, you can take control of the airwaves. You can bring up anything you want. 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733 with you in studio. It's Ian.
And Johnny Ray.
And do want to let you know about hope.freetalklive.com. Mark has been, Mark's our regular co-host here on Sunday nights. He's at an awards dinner for the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance with Daryl tonight. So I hope they're having fun. But he's been promoting this idea of building an orphanage in Jinja, Uganda. Our listeners have contributed thousands of dollars via a matching campaign thanks to Jax.io, the official wallet of Free Talk Live, the Jax wallet, and also thanks to Cell411 at getcell411.com. They're doing matching, meaning double matching. So each of those organizations is matching your contributions. If you want to help build an orphanage for, I think, like dozens, 40-something children in Uganda, it's happening. They're already working on the second story. You can get updates, photos, and such over at hope.freetalklive.com. That's where you can learn how to donate. And, of course, cryptocurrency is accepted, as well as those U.S. dollars and that stuff. So head on over to hope.freetalklive.com. .com to get the latest about that. We're going to get into your phone calls and thoughts if you want to share them with us. They don't have to be about Bitcoin, but that's what we've been discussing here tonight. And the conflict that's been going on, mostly behind the scenes on message boards and forums and things like that, Reddits, there have been some nasty, you know, back and forth between the different sides of people that are supporting various different technologies to increase the Bitcoin network's capacity, basically. And this is what they've been fighting over internally for like a couple of years. And finally, it's all coming to a head. It's the ugliness is coming into public view. August 1st is this big deadline for what they call a user-activated soft fork that may result in Bitcoin splitting into two, which could be a little confusing, because both Bitcoins are going to be claiming to be the real Bitcoin, and only the market will be able to decide which one is the real Bitcoin. And, of course, we're going to keep you as up-to-date as we can on this, because I know a number of our listeners got into Bitcoin and did very well, because if you bought Bitcoin a few years back, you've probably seen the price go up over time. Even though it's gone down in the last week, it's still up over what it was a year ago, up quite a bit, as a matter of fact. Right now, it's at around $1,960 at the moment, globally, according to BitcoinAverage.com. So there's all this kind of uncertainty about what's going to happen on August 1st. And again, maybe nothing's going to happen. Maybe this user-activated soft fork is going to completely fizzle, and it's going to be a paper tiger, and nothing's going to occur. I mean, that would be ideal, but we don't know what's going to happen. There is the possibility for that soft fork. There is the possibility for Bitcoin to split into two. So the question becomes, what can you do, you know, to protect yourself in this situation? What are the options that you have? And that's what my article over at freekeen.com gets into here. And these are suggestions. I would not say one way or another what you should do, but these are some ideas for what you could do. Number one, check your keys. If you've got some amount of Bitcoin, you need to make sure that it's a non-custodial wallet, to which you hold the private key. So some examples of non-custodial wallets include Jax, Blockchain.info, Mycelium, Airbits, Copay, Bitcoin.com, Bread Wallet, Electrum, and Exodus. And by no means is that all of them. There are others out there, but that's, you know, a relatively short list of some of the more popular wallets out there. If you had to write down 12 words to back up your wallet, which hopefully you've backed up your wallet, if you wrote down those 12 words, then you have your private key. So if you were wondering, is this wallet a non-custodial wallet or not? If you got the 12 words, you've got the private key, that's your wallet. That's the right kind of wallet to have to get through this, you know, these possibly tumultuous times. If, on the other hand, your Bitcoin is being stored in a custodial wallet where someone else, like Coinbase, Local Bitcoins, Paxful, Backpage, Zappo, Free Wallet, GDAX, Kraken, Bitstamp, Poloniex, or any Bitcoin exchange has control over the private key. So do you see the distinction there?
I think so. I have a blockchain.info wallet.
Yes. So that means that you do have control over the private keys. I think blockchain is making people write down suggesting strongly that they write down those 12 words. So if you haven't done that yet, you should.
Okay.
You should always have a backup of your wallet in case you need it for some reason, in case your phone breaks or you lose access to you forget your password or something like that. But if you've got Bitcoin in an exchange or in any kind of custodial wallet, where custodial meaning there's somebody else taking care of your keys for you, you've entrusted them, sort of like with a bank. You've entrusted them with your money. In this case, you're entrusting Coinbase or these exchanges with your money. That means you are then subject to their whims regarding how they handle the fork. So if the fork happens, maybe they'll give you access to both of the Bitcoin. Because remember, when the Bitcoin forks, if you have your private keys, you get the old Bitcoin and the new Bitcoin.
It's like a stock split.
Sort of. You could look at it that way. They might give you access to both, or maybe they'll only give you access to one of the two. It's best, therefore, to hold your Bitcoin in a wallet which gives you access to your private key instead of giving corporations control over your key and therefore your Bitcoin. So that's one idea. And whether or not Bitcoin forks on August 1st, having control over your private keys is a good idea, period. Because if you don't have control over your keys, again, you're subject to whatever the organization is that does have those keys, whatever they want to do to it. If they get robbed, as exchanges have done, they've been hacked and they've been broken into and had Bitcoin stolen from them, you're SOL. You put your trust in some other organization to take care of things for you. They drop the ball, you're out the money. So it's always a good idea to have your private keys. Whether or not you think anything's going to happen on August 1st, it's a good idea to have your private keys. Keep that in mind. So more options. What else can you do? You can hold. This has been a long time proven strategy for Bitcoin. Like, I'm not an investor, so I'm pretty good at just holding the Bitcoin. I can just hang on to it. So once you're sure that your Bitcoins are in a non-custodial wallet, hold on for the ride. If Bitcoin forks, you shouldn't spend or receive Bitcoin if you can avoid it until the dust has settled. If you're a Bitcoin accepting merchant, lock up the point of sale device and instruct the staff to politely decline any customers who want to use Bitcoin to pay until the confusion no longer remains online. Stay positive. There's a good chance the Bitcoin price could drop dramatically. It already has dropped hundreds of dollars in just the last week. And this, you know, the fork hasn't even happened. So it could drop dramatically during the fork and any ensuing reorganizations. Bitcoin can survive this challenge. We've had drops in price before, dramatic ones. So watch, wait, and keep up with the latest. That's if you're going to hold.
It's tempting because if this price drop happens, like you say, it's going to leave me wanting to buy, not just hold, but I'm afraid if I get into the market, then just kind of weird wackiness.
But then if you buy, you might end up losing that Bitcoin that you bought if that other chain gets wiped out.
Right.
So you shouldn't be buying. You shouldn't be selling. You shouldn't be. If you're going to sell, which is my next option here, to bail out. Like, so there's the hold option. You just hang on to what you got and try to get through this.
Uh-huh.
The other option is bail out. If you're too spooked by the possibility and the uncertainty of a fork, you can always cash out. for fiat currency like U.S. dollars, or you can trade your Bitcoin for other competing cryptocurrencies like Dash or Ether, for instance. Keen area merchants or any merchants who want to cash out, well, that's more for keen people. Anyway, so bailout's an option. So if you're spooked, you know, there are people, plenty of people are going to be willing to buy Bitcoin, especially because the price is down. So, you know, do you want to sell now or do you want to sell, you know, on July 29th or the 30th? Who knows? The price might go down between now and then. We don't know what the price is going to do. We don't know how the market's going to respond to this stuff. So again, there's risk involved in any of these propositions. There's risk involved in holding. There's risk involved in bailing out, because if you bail out and the price goes up, you're going to be kicking yourself. If you bail out and the price drops to the floor, you'll be happy that you did it. So there's I'm not telling you what the right answer is here. And then the third option that I've suggested is to pick a side. If you really want to take some risk, you can try to pick a winner in the event of a fork. And as soon as the two competing Bitcoins appear on exchanges for trading, you can try selling your least favorite Bitcoin and buying your favorite Bitcoin or other altcoins. Personally, I won't be taking that level of risk, because that's super risky to try to determine what the market's gonna do with these two Bitcoins if Bitcoin forks, to, you know, pick one or the other, because you might end up losing big time.
Oh, yeah.
If you do that. So I don't recommend that one, but it's an option. There's more coming up. Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. Moments remain. There's enough time for you if you want to join us here. You don't have to talk about Bitcoin, but that has been the in-depth discussion we've been having tonight about the future of Bitcoin. I think there's a bright future for it, but we got a rocky road ahead of us here, and it can be a little scary. You know, the idea of Bitcoin splitting into two Bitcoins, or possibly more than two Bitcoins. It's Johnny Ray and Ian here in the studio. You're invited to join us online anytime over at freetalklive.com and get behind the Patreon, which is a way for you to get behind our satellite coverage with $2 a month's worth of support. If you like the idea of us spreading the ideas of liberty and freedom and peace and cryptocurrency into countries around the world, many of whom don't have good internet access, we can do that with our satellite signals. We're on in sub-Saharan Africa, over North and Central America, so we've got two satellite signals right now, and we can expand that to more, but it does cost money to do that. So if you want to help us cover the existing satellite costs and expand to new satellites and help spread the ideas of liberty, it's $2 a month to join the Patreon. You can learn more about it at fund.lrn.fm. LRN's the Liberty Radio Network. It's a satellite channel with not just Free Talk Live on it, but dozens of other great liberty-oriented shows around the clock, 24/7. So, of course, you can listen online anytime at lrn.fm, but there are a lot of people who don't have internet access, and they should be able to hear the ideas of liberty as well. And they can if they tune into our satellite channel, which is what they call free-to-air, meaning that anybody with a cheap receiver and dish pointed at the right place in the sky will be able to receive lrn.fm, and currently can. So if you want to get behind that program, please join the Patreon and learn more about it. There's a 3-minute video there that you can watch that'll give you some idea of how important this is. And if you think it's worth $2 a month to you or more, you can contribute at fund.lrn.fm, F-U-N-D, fund.lrn.fm. So we're talking about this potential for Bitcoin to split into more than one Bitcoin coming up here on August 1st. If you missed the whole discussion, there's an article that you can read that'll explain it all, which we've been sharing on the air here tonight. You can go to freekeen.com. It's called Why We're Temporarily Shutting Down Bitcoin Vending Machines on July 31st. And we were just going over some tangible things that you can do to prepare for this. Now, again, maybe nothing's going to happen. Maybe this is all fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Again, not my intention to spread those things, but my intention to inform, my intention to give you, as somebody who may be new to Bitcoin or somebody who's been considering getting Bitcoin or might already have some amount of it, some options as far as how you can handle something if it happens on August 1st. And we will be following it here. So just to recap briefly here, you can make sure you have access to your private keys by using a wallet like Jax or Blockchain, Mycelium, Airbits, Copay, Bitcoin.com, Bread Wallet, Electrum, Exodus. If you've got your 12 words, the backup words that you wrote down, you have your private keys. You're in the best possible shape to come out of this on the other side. You might have more than one Bitcoin on the other end of this thing. unless you sell out, unless you decide to bail out in advance. If you sell all your Bitcoin before the potential fork, then you'll have nothing after that. So there's risks involved in all of these options. So you can hold on to the Bitcoin. Johnny Rye asked you during the break, that's what your plan is, right?
Yeah, I haven't been buying any lately, and I am not savvy enough to navigate these whitewater rapids of cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to sit back and watch what happens.
That's my plan as well. And again, you got to decide for yourself what to do. Hold, bail out, or if you want to get really risky, you can hold through the fork and then immediately start trading once the... because what'll happen at some point, if there's a fork, if Bitcoin splits into two or more, then the exchanges... there's different exchanges all around the world. They'll all have to decide, and I'm sure they're already thinking about what to do. They probably already have a plan that they've put into place. But they have to decide what they want to do. Do they want to take both of the Bitcoins onto their exchange and allow people to trade between them and buy and sell in both of these Bitcoins? Or do they think that one Bitcoin is the clear winner, and do they just want to forget about the other Bitcoin? Let's say the user-activated soft fork Bitcoin doesn't have much support behind it. It's only got 10% of the mining power. It's a weak chain. It might even be snuffed out. Does the exchange want to even allow that on their platform for trading? So we don't know. We don't know which exchanges are going to do what when it comes down to it. And so somebody who really wanted to take some risks, if there was an exchange that were allowing both of the different Bitcoins to be traded, then if you want to pick a winner or try to, you know, predict what the market's going to get behind, then you can buy and sell and, you know, sell out one. Like, if you have a 10 Bitcoin that then splits into 10 of the original Bitcoin and 10 of the new Bitcoin or the UASF Bitcoin, then, you know, you can trade 10 of them for the other side, or 10 from one to the other, and then, you know, see what happens. You know, that's pretty risky, but it's an option for you. I won't be doing that. I'll be holding on to it just like you will, Johnny Ray. That's my plan. But again, I can't tell you what you should do with yours. Now, I hope, for the sake of simplicity, for the future where nothing happens on August 1st. However, there is an argument that Bitcoin would be better off, ultimately, if it does fork, since finally both of the sides of this geek war will get what they want, a version of Bitcoin that conforms to their vision for what the currency should be. And that could be a good thing, because then, you know, we'll have these two options and the market can decide which one's the best, whatever way that happens to go. Now, maybe that'll only be a temporary calm down, because who knows, maybe then the other Bitcoiners on one side will split, you know, 6 months down the road again. I mean, who knows? Hopefully it won't do that, but you never know. I mean, certainly when it comes to the world's religions, we've seen plenty of schisms and splits in different religions, where one group of people within a religion believes something that's disparate from the other, and they can't agree, they can't get along, so they split off. But the difference between that and Bitcoin splitting is, with a religion or, you know, some political split, which happens too in political parties, right? Well, then both sides just go their merry way. They get their own ideas, they get their own church, they get their own building, you know, whatever. They get their congregation, they go off and do their thing. Money's not really a big factor in those. It's just about ideas. But in this, we're talking about billions of dollars of value. You know, you said, what, 40-something billion dollars between Bitcoin and Ethereum right now?
Yeah, $45 billion between the top two.
So, I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars in value. So this isn't just your typical ideological split. This is people's savings. This is people's businesses. And it's a much more serious affair, more dangerous.
I'm a big believer. I believe in the big blocker side. But that is mostly because I learned about Bitcoin from Free Talk Live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're sympathetic to the big blocker argument, not because
I don't know enough about
not
it.
Not because
I said
you know a lot about it, but because your guru was Roger Ver, wasn't it? And he's definitely on one side. So I take my cues from reddit.com/r/BTC.
Mm-hmm.
When I read about Bitcoin, that's where I go to read about it. So I'm just I take what they give me, and so I believe that the UASF crowd is headed for ignominy and oblivion,
self destruction.
Yeah, and so, but
they don't see it that way, though. They see themselves as the saviors of, you know, of their vision for Bitcoin, and that they believe that they have much greater numbers than appears that they do. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I just want to see Bitcoin get fixed, personally. I don't know what it's going to take. I hope this SegWit2x fixes Bitcoin, because I don't want to see Bitcoin lose its number one position. And that's because I've got some Bitcoin, right? Like, you know, I want to see Bitcoin succeed. It was there first. It hopefully will continue to be in the number one slot, but it's lost its market strength over now, last several months.
Have you taken any steps like Mark suggested you do insofar as keeping a nominal amounts of all of the top coins? So if you've got, say...
I have some Ether. I did sell about 10% of my Bitcoin for Ether, which for me is a big deal because I'm not an investor type. I don't think a whole lot about investing and all that. But I, you know, I was a little spooked about what could happen to Bitcoin, so I wanted to have, you know, a good amount of Ether. Since I made that decision, I've lost on that because Ether has gone down in relation to Bitcoin recently. So, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles. Sometimes you win some, sometimes you lose some. And that's actually where what I mentioned next is in the story is Ethereum, because they did have a split. Last year, what is now the number two currency split off into two Ethereums. There's Ethereum and then there's Ethereum Classic. And this was a split, a sort of an ideological split, where one side wanted Ethereum to be immutable. The other one wanted to reverse a mistake that had been made in the blockchain with this decentralized autonomous organization, without getting into further detail. But since the split happened, or when the split happened, both of them plummeted in value. And since then, they've gone up dramatically in value, both of them, to where Ethereum is now the number two currency and Ethereum Classic is the number five cryptocurrency. All right. So ultimately, the split was good for both of those sides. Will Bitcoin end up playing out the same way? I don't know. And one of the other factors is, unlike Ethereum, Bitcoin's involved in retail. Ethereum's just this sort of idea. It's not, you know, you don't pay for things with Ethereum in real life or online. That just doesn't happen. But with Bitcoin, it does. And having the confusion of two Bitcoins could be a little strange. So check out the article at freekeen.com. Thanks, Johnny Ray. We'll see you tomorrow night online. In the meantime, freetalklive.com.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.